great thinker, Bill Boomer. Thanks for joining us, Bill.
Nice to be here.
Now, Bill, you've been involved with swimming for many years, and you're kind of known as a thinker outside the box, more of an observer and a contemplator. You were USA Swimming's first stroke coach. You go on various trips with the United States Swimming. But you really come from not the purest of the sport. How is sport changing today in your eyes?
I think swimming is changing for the better. When I first came into the sport, it was all about building engines. And that's physiology. And for the longest time, I think up until a few years ago, we were trying still to build a more efficient engine. And sport has changed by way of, I think, the introduction of the nervous system into the practice of swimming.
Now, when you say build the engine, you're referring to the cardiovascular system.
I am referring to the cardiovascular system and its internal efficiency, getting the most power per calorie, let's say, into the water. And that was the focus. And it's a work focus.
And with that, the mega yardage, build it up and resting for the taper has been the traditional approach.
Right. And that's just part of it. I mean, yes, there's a lot of volume in there, but people have been searching for the holy grail of work in order to apply it to velocity in swimming for a long, long time. And I think that someplace in the late 90s and early 2000s, some people began to realize that maybe the answer isn't just in work. Maybe it's in another facet of who the human being is and what their relationship is to the water.
Well, let me ask you this question then. When you look at the cardiovascular system, it's kind of been perfected. I mean, we've really figured out how to do that. But you just mentioned the nervous system. Take us through nervous system 101.
Well, if you look at the human being, in fact, what swimmers are initially are human beings. And you look at the human being, and what you really have is a nervous system, the brain, and all of the receptors of the environment that is supported by the energy system. It's the nervous system's decisions, the forehead, and reactions, the back of the head, okay, are supported by our physiology. In swimming for the longest time, we focused on the physiology. We focused on the support system, and we haven't focused on who we really are, which is a nervous system. So I think we're beginning to, I don't know if it's through innocence or just innocent discovery maybe, that we're beginning to incorporate who we really are into swimming, which is beginning to focus on how our nervous system works and what that has to do with velocity in swimming.
Now, some athletes have a God-given cardiovascular system, and some of them have a God-given nervous system. How can you identify which one you need to pay more attention to?
Well, I look at swimming athletes, and actually all athletes, but in swimming, I look at swimming athletes in the way that I look at how their nervous system interacts with the environment. And I call it cats and dogs. Okay, a cat, if you look in the natural world, a cat lives in that world, exists in that world, survives in that world in a totally different way than the dog does. A dog is more about the efficiency of the engine. They run down their prey, they work hard, okay, and they accomplish what their goals are, but it's through a totally different mechanism. They're in a pack most of the time. And so when I look at swimming athletes and I look at those athletes that are successful through work and volume and a physiological approach, then I think of those athletes as dogs. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that that's that side of the nervous system approach. If you look at the cat world is made up of a lot of different species. Like the leopard is a killer. That is, they score points. Okay, they kill, they eat, they exist. And the cheetah is a different cat than the leopard. But they're both cats, okay? The cheetah might be the 50 person in swimming. They burn really, really hot. And their nervous system is really involved. And after they have a short, fast burn, they may need 3-4 hours before they can burn again. A leopard is a hunter and attacks and kills, and it figures out where everything is going to be. It's a solitary hunter. It's like the cheetah. But it may be able to hunt more often. It may be able to swim more events in a meet, but it's still a leopard. It's not a dog. So even though the leopard could swim more events in a meet, doesn't mean you treat it like a dog in practice. Because if you treat a leopard, a cat, like a dog in practice, their adrenal system goes to pot. They get sick, and eventually they leave the sport because they can't exist comfortably and healthfully in the sport.
Now, that's a good point. For the majority of the time, have most of the coaches been training all the athletes like dogs?
In my experience, most athletes are trained like dogs. And it's interesting that if you look back on some of your own athletes' coaches, that those athletes that said they were sick or they had an excuse to do this or not to do that, a lot of that is basically protecting themselves from the work. Not that they don't want to do the work, okay, they don't want to do that kind of work. That's the kind of work that would drive them out of the sport. They want to do different kind of work, a more intense kinds of work with a little bit more rest and a little bit more skill oriented, because a cat has to know where their prey, where they're going to meet the prey. They can't run it down. They can't get a pack to go after it. They have to be right on the mark, and you have to be right on the mark in the water as a cat, a swimmer. So they're totally different. But we're not treating cats and dogs differently in practice. We haven't up to this time. All right. What I'm seeing a little bit of is that you look around, and some coaches are beginning to treat their cats like cats, and all of a sudden they're getting performance out of those people. And it isn't like those people are not ready and willing to sacrifice for the sport, but it's just that you have to treat the human being as they are. You cannot treat that human being as you hope they would be.
Okay, so now if you have a baseline of aerobic training and cardiovascular training, and then you kind of diverge, I'm assuming, towards training the nervous system for those cat-like, and then continue with, you know, the traditional cardiovascular approach with those who are born dogs. Are you? How is the nervous system being trained differently? What kind of approaches can people take?
Well, when you think of high velocity, high speed swimming, all right, that's part of your nervous system. When you train somebody over long distances in great periods of time, what happens is that person cannot sustain the patterns that are racing patterns over that time. So their bodies soften, they widen out in the water for survival. That widening out, softened body posture is the posture that they then have to race with. So when you're treating a nervous system for high speed velocity, you have to have practice in that velocity, and that nervous system has to be ready and able at any time to swim fast. So you treat that person and how you design their practice so that their nervous system is always acquiring racing information, not practicing information. Okay, so when that person switches off and goes on automatic in their race, they have a racing nervous system to bring out.
Now that's a good point. When you look at training the racing situation in practice is what you're saying. Are there environmental elements with that, like positioning of flags and some things that are on a subconscious level that are also affecting the nervous system?
Absolutely. If you look at the world that we live in, all right, and the time that we live in, we're in an age of technology. We're also in an age of advertisement. And how does advertisement get your attention? They assault your nervous system. Good or bad, they assault your nervous system so that you notice what's going on. But in fact, our nervous system is a hunter-gatherer nervous system. Our nervous system was developed hundreds of thousands of years ago. So we have a hunter-gatherer's nervous system, and we're living in an age of technology. So when your swimmers come into your pool, their nervous system has been under assault by lights, by noise, by confusion, by buildings, by everything, cars. So they walk in onto your pool, and all of a sudden, they're in an agitated state. All right? Now, you have two nervous systems. You have an early warning nervous system. And that is the eye, the ear, the mouth, all right, touch. You can, forebrain, decide to touch, to hear, to listen. That's like an early warning system for the hunter-gatherer nervous system. You also have an internal nervous system, which is all about balance, that is vestibular, where the weight of the head is on the spine line. It's proprioceptive, where my arms and where my body is in space. And it's tactile, that is what's going on the skin of my body. That's internal. That is not cognitive. That's not thought about. Those are reactive things. That's athleticism. Well, the quality of this internal system is all about being athletic. The quality of the external system is all about being prepared. All right. So when your kids come into practice and they're assaulted, what happens is that the internal nervous system is diminished. So every time your kid comes into practice before you start a practice, what you have to do is rebalance the nervous systems. So there's ways that you can rebalance the nervous system, but you have to attend to a hunter-gatherer nervous system living in a world of technology, and you're expecting that nervous system to be able to produce velocity.
So let me take this a step further then. If you're trying to create the race environment in practice, then you're stimulating the nervous system so that when they end up in that race environment, it already knows what to do and how to react
right.
to that. What is the difference between that and very strong visualization?
I would think very strong visualization would be one way to balance a nervous system. Okay, you basically visualization occurs in a different state than frenetic movement. All right, it's a still state. In general, it's a still state. So it's one way of balancing the nervous system, bringing up your athleticism, toning down your early warning system, so that when the person gets in the water, their sensitivity to the water and therefore their relationship to that water, which is what produces velocity, okay, that is enhanced. But until you can bring your internal mechanisms for sensory information in the environment, until you can bring those up, you don't have a very good feel for what's going on when you put your kids in the water.
And when you look at the human spirit, and you can't count that out when you get up to step on that block, that there's any intangibles that take place. Would you say that the human spirit resides in the heart, or is it going to be in the brain, the spinal column?
The human spirit basically resides in your soul. You know, we come from ages down the road, not just from the grandmother, your grandfather. There are things about us that are ancient, that we're not honoring. All right. If we began to honor who we really were, just the nervous system itself, which is a hunter-gatherer nervous system, you would be doing different things before you get up on the block. Maybe, okay. Right now, the things that we do before we get up on the block are about our physiology, pretty much.
If the lion is the king of the cats,
right.
Is Gary Hall the king of the cats here?
Gary Hall is the king of the cheetahs. All right, he's a pure cat, and not only is he a pure cat, but he operates like a cat out of the water. He will not let anybody make a dog out of him, and he hasn't for his whole life, and that's the reason he's been successful.
Would you put Dara Torres in the same category?
Dara Torres is a cat born, treated like a dog, made into a dog early in her career, left swimming, and became a cat again. All right, came back into swimming and was treated like a cat. All right, and I think she's still being treated like a cat. And so she's being very, very successful. But you can't make a cat into a dog. And you can't make a dog into a cat. people try to do that, people leave the sport.
Janet Evans, the all-time distance greatest. Is she a classic dog, or is she a hybrid?
She may be a little bit of a hybrid. If you watch her swim underwater, her freestyle was innovative, and we never realized it. She's basically body surfing underwater with her off of her hips in her freestyle. So she had a little bit of an arm throw harmonic in her freestyle. And so she had a really different freestyle. And I don't really know the background of her training, except that I think it was some volume. But she did have a little different freestyle.
And where was Mark Spitz in his time?
Mostly in the first place. Mark Spitz was articulate, and I would suspect more of a cat than a dog. But I'm not sure that he was totally treated like a cat.
And let's bring us up to date to Michael Phelps.
Michael Phelps has a lot of cat-like instincts, and you can see them in his races. He has a great relationship with the water. He has a lot of tactile sensitivity, and those are cat-like. And I would put him in the leopard end of the cat spectrum. He can hunt a lot, all right. He can hunt often, and so he's not like a Gary Hall, who is a cat, but he can't hunt as often as Michael can.
Well, thanks, Bill, for joining us. It's been a great interview.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you, Brett. Ooh, hey.